Hello and welcome to Cyber Sound Bites, the podcast that explores how best to protect yourself, your family and friends online. We'll also keep you updated on the latest cyber threats whilst taking a deeper dive into subjects such as social media use, the dark web and online gaming. I'm Claire Chambers, and this time I'm talking to Mike Ancliffe, a cybersecurity specialist from the technical assurance team based at RAF Witten. He's a self-confessed geek who breaks things. I asked him to explain what the team does.
The way I often describe it is, as a team, we answer the difficult questions. So we're highly technical, and I don't know. As if, for example, somebody has a widget, they're not sure if that widget is safe to use, we will help them find out.
So what sort of stuff do you do day to day as a cyber security specialist?
So it could be anything, really. So I work within the technical assurance team over at RAF Witten. We specialise in answering the difficult questions that other people struggle to answer. So for example, we might get a piece of kit that's destined for the front lines. So maybe a targeting system or something like that. And we will essentially pick it apart to understand the intricacies of how it works, any risks that that might be bringing to our people on the people at the front, so to speak, understanding how we can use that piece of equipment safely, that kind of stuff. And not just that, we also do a lot of, say, communication devices, a lot of laptops. Everything we do is about making it safer for the people that we work with to do their job.
Okay.
It's a lot of breaking stuff. It's a lot of recommending fixes for stuff. It's fun. It's fun.
It sounds like a lot of problem solving as well. Kind of being given a bit of equipment and then seeing how could someone do a cyber attack on this and affect people's work in the future, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So we throw a lot of spanners in the works, that's for sure. So what I like to say is we throw a lot of spanners, but even if we do throw a spanner in the works, we'll attach a post-it note that tells you how to get it back out again. Because cybersecurity is often the last thing people think about. It's something that's often taken for granted. So I think that's why the role that the cyber arms of the organization take is very, very important.
Yeah, it sounds very important. Have you ever been stumped by a problem or a spanner that you've thrown in there? Have you ever been stumped by one of those problems?
Yeah, many, many, many times. It's often the case. Cause unfortunately, with anything, there are times where you'll realize that something is intrinsically broken. It's not going to get any better. There's no fix for the problem. It's much like if you went out to get in your car in the morning and there was no engine in there, you'd have two questions, I suppose. One is, am I going to get to work? The second is, who stole my engine? But there's not a simple fix for that. The solution is get a new car. You know, it's get a new car or spend a lot of money fixing that problem. Often, I think a lot of the problems come down to budgetary constraints. So we might have a solution, but that solution might be out of budget, for example. So it might be that the vendor, the person implementing it, or the contractual terms don't allow for that solution to be implemented. And that can be quite frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. But you find a fix and you find a way around it, and then you get rolling again on another project, I imagine.
sometimes not. Oh. Unfortunately, sometimes sometimes it's just a case of, you know what, it's broken. We need to find a safe set of criteria we can operate within.
Right.
And there's a whole arm of our department that deals with just that. It's called a risk balance case, which is ultimately what can't we fix? What do we need to do to make it palatable? How can we How can we, what can we do to make it slightly more acceptable, and how long are we going to accept it for? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, can we talk about a few of the roles that you've had over the year? You've worked as a
Yes.
pen tester. What is that, please? I've never heard of that.
Penetration tester, so ethical hacker, essentially.
Right.
So, yeah, we break stuff for the purpose of good. So, as a for example, you might say in the real world, you've got a website, you've just had that built. It's really shiny, it's really fancy. You're about to go online, but before you do so, you want somebody to have a look to see how it can be broken, and that's where you'd approach somebody like us. So what we do is we'll break it, or we'll do our best to break it, and then we'll provide you the details of how we broke it, and how you can mitigate the things that we found before you go online. So that way, when the bad people come along, they don't do the same thing.
I like that your job is to break things. That's quite a
It's,
good part of your role, right?
it's fantastic. I'd probably say it's I mean, it's not a job.
Yeah.
It genuinely isn't a job. It's a passion. It's a hobby. I think a lot of people that do the kind of work that I do, they live it. It's You can often find at Christmas time, people get a Christmas break, and they'll spend a large portion of that Christmas break trying to break something. It's just for fun.
I feel bad for your family around Christmas. They get the lovely presents and you're like, how can I break this one?
Well, so an organization called SANS, they used to do something called the hol I think they still do. I've not picked it up for a while, but they used to do the Holiday Hack Challenge, and it was absolutely fantastic as a it's kind of like a gamified real world but not real world capture the flag, where you have to work through loads of different problems. The biggest problem actually being that it would take weeks, weeks and weeks, which is obviously not ideal when you're supposed to be spending time with your family.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a passion.
But if you wanted to test your own cybersecurity skills, that'd be a great way to do it in your own time, right?
Absolutely, and there's actually something else as well that we use. So we have, as an organisation, the Ministry of Defence have access to something called Immersive Labs, and that is it's the same sort of concept, where you have systems set up that are designed to be broken with flags that you. So the flag might be, for example, just a small text string that's hidden in a file somewhere, and honestly, anybody can try it as well. It's accessible. It's available to everybody within the MOD. So, if anybody does want to test or learn, Immersive Labs is the way to go.
That sounds like a great way to do it because at the end of the day, you're in a safe place to do it. So if you make any mistakes, you can go back and check. And then when it happens in the real world, you've got that knowledge behind you and you're ready to go. Now, you've worked as a red teamer before. Can you explain what that involved?
Yeah, so red team is probably my favorite element of the job. So, with a pen test, typically we'll speak to the client. Everybody knows we're going to be doing what we're doing. They'll get things ready for us. They'll provide us access to systems, provide us documentation, all the other stuff, and then patiently await our outcome. Red teaming works slightly differently. So, with a red team exercise, it's more akin to what a real-world threat actor would do. So, typically, only a few people within the organization will know what we're doing, or there'll be some blanket approval or coverage for us to perform that kind of activity, and we'll just get pointed at something and see how far we can go. So, that could be, I mean, typically we'll have a set of objectives. Sometimes the objectives are get as far as you can. Sometimes the objectives are there's a file on a specific system that's been placed there for you to try and get access to. See how close you can get to
Oh, that does sound fun. Some like undercover action. And I imagine the
that.
adrenaline that's running through you when you're in that situation as well, knowing you're surrounded by people who should be able to catch you out.
Absolutely, 16-hour days is nothing. So we've run some interesting inside the MOD and outside of the MOD, but we've run some interesting ones that it's It is a rush. It genuinely is. It's one of the most fun things you can do as a cybersecurity specialist, in my opinion.
Is that your favorite part of the role?
It is. I don't know. I'm getting old, so it was. I'd say it was, but now seeing that evolution, I think, is something that I enjoy. So I'm a firm believer that if I do my job properly, I'm not needed. So over time, the clearer the message I deliver, and the clearer the message we as cybersecurity specialists deliver, the less necessary we become. And I quite enjoy seeing that evolution when working with, say, the same client again and again and again. When you first start working for them, say, I don't know, we talk back to your website, your fancy website. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm sure it's wonderful. The first time we test that, we'll find a whole bunch of stuff, and we'll say, this is how you fix it. Now, well, typically what we, or you know, this is how we recommend you go about fixing it. Now, typically what we'll do is say, we'll say that every time there's a major change going forward, you should get it tested again, because you may introduce new risks. So say 6 months down the line, you've made some changes and you call us back in again. Now, because obviously we've tested it previously, and we've retested to make sure that the things that you fixed that I've actually fixed, when it comes to 6 months down the line, we'd expect to only find things that relate to the new things you've implemented. But not only that, the new things you've implemented taking into consideration the things that we found before. So things typically get better and better and better and better over time, and that's I don't know, that is my favorite thing to
Yeah.
see. It sounds kind of sad, but
No, it's
I do
nice.
enjoy that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's to be able to help people like that and help them be secure and help them progress in whatever they're doing. It sounds really good. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of how people can protect themselves. And let's start with why it's so important that people are aware that what they're doing online and how it can affect the MOD and themselves personally. What do you reckon to that?
So, I mean, that's a big subject. So,
Let's start with how what you're doing online can affect what people are doing at the MOD.
I think the biggest one is the need to know element. So, does everybody need to know you work for the MOD? Does anybody? It's quite an interesting one as well. I suppose I'll expand upon it further in a sec. But so a lot of people overshare. A lot of people, I think one of the, I suppose one of the biggest ones is things like LinkedIn. So the amount of people that have a LinkedIn account that is, and their connections are people they've worked with, either people they actively work with in the MOD, people that they've worked with kind of through contact, contractors, vendors, those kind of things. And it's the operational security element of that. People don't necessarily think about what they're sharing. I think one of the most important things to remember is if the threat actor is suitably funded and they have sufficient time, they will compromise you. They'll compromise what you as an individual. They'll get access to your information. They'll gain a foothold on the devices that you own. And the easiest way to stop that is to not give them the information they need in the first place to target you. I mean, yeah, okay, it's a little bit scaremongering, but I think it stands true that vulnerabilities in everything, there are vulnerabilities in everything you own. Many of those vulnerabilities have not been discovered yet. So take your laptop that's in front of you right now. It is a near certainty that there will be a vulnerable piece of code on that system that can be exploited by an attacker. And all the attacker needs to work out is, well, A, that it exists, and B, how to get to it. And attackers are well funded. This is what they do for a living. They do this. Now, as somebody that works for the Ministry of Defence, you're a target. Plain and simple, you're a target. Even if you work in, I don't know, the Department of Ordering Pens. I don't know what that department's called. I'm
Very
sure it's
important role,
fantastic to
yeah.
work in there. Absolutely, yeah. But even if you work in that department, you are a target.
Yeah.
100% you're a target just because you're inside the fence.
Okay, so if someone has had their information attacked by someone who's trying to get into the MOD, maybe via LinkedIn because you've given too much information away, how can it then affect the work at the MOD?
So, this is the thing. A lot of people look at going back to the person that orders the pens. A lot of people think it's very, a lot of people think, oh, I'm not important. My job's not important. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Who's going to want to attack me? Who's going to, I don't work in any secret areas. I don't, whatever. And it's a very kind of, it's very easy to take that kind of blasé attitude of, well, I only do this, no one's going to be interested in my stuff. If somebody is able to, say, for example, convince you to plug something into your device, for example, and they're able to take advantage of an exploit, we call them a 0 day. So it's 0 day because it's unknown, but it's unknown publicly and by the vendor. But say the attacker knows about a 0 day, you plug a device in, it compromises the machine. So from there, it's not just your machine and your data that they've got access to because your device is connected to the VPN. The VPN is connected to Office 365 or Microsoft 365 and various other systems. It's connected to my HR. It's got privileged access to various other areas of the organization, some which you don't even know about. And the thing is, you might not be the target. The target could be the target could be somebody that works kind of, I don't know, in a completely the opposite end of the country, but it would be very straightforward for an attacker once they've got code to execute on your machine. So once they've compromised your machine, to then attack other areas of the network.
Absolutely. So it's everyone's duty to remain vigilant. Now, you bring up
Absolutely.
unauthorized use of USBs, and that is the theme for this month.
Yes.
If someone plugs in an unauthorized USB into their device, what do you do at that point? What happens? Do I panic?
Basically that's it. We all go home. It's done at that point. No, so we do have protections in place. Any organization will have protections in place. Unfortunately, so I'm not going to use the cliche. I am going to use the cliche term. We have to win 365 days of the year. The attacker only has to win one. That win could be plugging in. You plugging in the USB device, unfortunately. So this is the thing. A lot of people look at a device and they assume that it does what it appears to do. So, are you familiar with the USB rubber ducky?
No, tell me more.
Tell you more. I'll tell you more. So, the USB rubber ducky is looks like a normal flash drive. Everything about it would tell you it's a normal flash drive. When you plug it into your laptop. By the way, anybody in cyber that's listening to this will hate the fact that I've instantly gone to the USB rubber ducky, so I do apologize. It's the most kind of overplayed piece of kit ever, but anyway, so you plug it into the laptop or you plug it into whatever device, and instead of appearing as a flash storage device, what it does, it actually registers as a keyboard. So, interestingly, you can compromise a laptop using just the keys. So you don't need to use a mouse because obviously the USB, the actual device, the USB flash drive, in inverted commas, can't see the screen. However, if I press the Windows button R, that'll open up a run prompt. From there, I can type a whole list of commands. I could open, say, a text editor. I could type out a full-fledged application designed to compromise your system. I could save that to somewhere on the file system. I could execute that, or I could drop it somewhere where it'll execute next time the machine starts up. And I
Wow.
can do that in, yeah, and I can do that in half a second because it's essentially being run by it's being run at machine speed. So Yeah, so that and the USB rubber ducky is just one example. It's just one kind of commercially available piece of kit. There are not there. I mean, yeah, rubber ducky. They're not the cheapest thing. And by not the cheapest thing, I think last time I looked that you could pick them up, the official ones for about 70 quid.
Right.
You can, there are not there are alternatives for 20. So you can get a piece of kit for 20 quid that will do that. You can actually take an old Android phone. An old Android phone and program it to act as a USB as a it's, we call it a bad USB attack. We can program it to work as that, so you plug it in and it does its thing. You can even set it to so some devices actually do have a decoy USB partition on there as well, which is kind of cool.
What does that
But
mean?
that so it'll actually appear as a genuine working flash drive, and
Right.
it'll sit and wait. So you plug it in, it's a flash drive, it's got files on there, and it'll work, sit there for a predetermined amount of time, and then when you know when it's typically, I mean again it's logic. We could program the logic. So what we do is we wait till it's seen a file transfer, and then 30 seconds after that file transfer, it does a thing because that way it's pretty likely that your machine's going to be unlocked.
Yeah.
So there's that. I mean, the other thing is this is the thing, USB device is not always what it seems. I suppose that's the message I'm
Yeah.
trying to deliver.
And it could happen. So you might plug something in, and on the face of it, it looks like nothing's happened, nothing's changed. You might think, oh, it's all right, I've got away with that one. But something could be happening behind the scenes. What do you do at that point? Who do you report it to? How do I get help?
So, if
I'm panicking,
in
can you
doubt,
hear?
if in doubt, contact the SPOC. So, you've got the same number that you call when your laptop's broken. Tell them they can point you in the right direction. Failing that, there's we have the likes of Modcert. Oh, my brain switched off. Someone's going to shout at me. I'd say
There's,
contact the SPOC.
yeah,
Yeah,
they'll have
or
more
you know what?
advice.
Contact me. It's fine. We can contact me. I can have a look at it. That's yeah. We'll get. We'll send the people. We have forensic analysts in our team. It's fine. We can. But no, there is actually a process for that. And actually, if you look on the desktop on any Modnet laptop, one of the I think one of the most adv One of the best things we've done recently is we've started pushing out information on the desktop, and the information's there. The number for the SPOC is there. If you notice anything weird, even if it's just that little, it's so the amount of times you do something in life and you think, oh, that was a close one, or oh, I wonder. Don't wait. Just don't wait. Make
Yeah.
the phone call.
Yeah.
It's send an email. It's not. It's better to overreact than underreact.
Absolutely. What about on personal devices, away from MOD? What's the best way to protect that, and other than just not plugging in unauthorized USBs, but say you have done that, is
Mate. Yeah. So, well, with personal device, if you've plugged something in, you've that's it. You've kind of done.
Right.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's the reality of it is you are kind of done in many cases if it's not been detected. Because the thing is, it's highly unlikely that you'll realise that something's amiss. Which, so with a network like the MOD, there are lots and or like many of the MOD's networks or the networks that make up our day-to-day systems, there are lots and lots of measures in place that protect us from, I say protect us, they act as that kind of safety net. However, an attacker that's sufficiently skilled can bypass a lot of that, but
Right.
there'll always be artifacts left behind. Unfortunately, unless you report it, we don't know to look for those artifacts in many cases. There's a whole team that deal with that. DCO, the fantastic group, JCU, again, fantastic group of people based over at the GOSC in Corsham, and their day-to-day is finding evidence of this sort of stuff. So when somebody does something they shouldn't, however, we have to make it easy for
Yeah.
them. So you know, the reporting part is important. Just to reiterate, the reporting part is very important. But there are things that will help them find it. With your personal device, there's no such thing. So other than, say, your antivirus, which is, I mean, we can circumvent antivirus. It's easy. There are tools available that do that for us. You know, is if the thing with antivirus is a lot of people go, oh, it's got antivirus, it'll be fine. Well, no, it won't. And the reason it won't is because antivirus typically uses signature-based stuff. So it's signature-based detection. So it looks for certain behaviors and parameters, and it looks for certain patterns in the code or in the execution of that code that it knows to be malicious. But if you can take, if it's never seen them before, so if it's a custom piece of malware, which we write, we've done that for, in fact, we did that for the awareness, behaviors, and cultures team a couple of years ago. So for one of the escape rooms they did, and you know, we can write a piece of malware that the operating system won't detect as being malicious because it's never seen it before. So your antivirus is worth nothing for a start. You know what I mean, firewalls, yeah, okay, firewalls, you'll get notifications. There's ways to circumvent firewalls as well. That's not going to be a problem. Certainly host-based firewalls, so the actual firewall that runs on your laptop, your Windows firewall, that's easy. It's, I suppose what I'm saying is that your protections are worth nothing.
Good. Mike, I'm feeling really
So
settled now.
yeah, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Yeah, I like that. But if you want to give yourself the best chance, keep everything updated.
Okay,
Update everything.
I was about to ask you, as a specialist in this subject, and you've now got me quite nervous about what protections I thought I had in place, and I thought I was quite clued up. What are your top tips to, say, cybersecure?
Update everything, patch everything. The vendors release patches for a reason. You know, Windows, when Windows pops up and says, hey, I've got an update, or when you know, your Mac says the same or your phone says the same, do it. Click update, enable automatic updates. A lot of people, especially with mobile phones are probably the biggest, I'd say they're the most, for many people, underappreciated threat vector is your mobile phone. A lot of people don't, but you use it every day. You use it every day, most of the time. For so many people today, that phone is in your hand all the time. And if you're not updating things, you're not updating the operating system, you're not updating the applications that run on it, then it's only a matter of time before you visit a link that you shouldn't, or you open a text message from a random number that contains some spurious stuff, and your phone switches off. It happens. We see it all the time. So keep everything updated. That is number one, is patch everything. And the other side is education, due diligence. Does it feel wrong for me to do this thing? Because if it feels wrong, there's a fair chance it is. It's plugging something in, clicking a link. And the other side then is, well, actually, if I do something, who do I speak to? Who do I turn to? Now, in your personal life, that's difficult. I get a lot of people contact me, a lot of friends and family. I've just, oh, Mike, I've just clicked this. Oh, Mike, I've just clicked that. Oh, Mike, I definitely didn't click this, but hypothetically, say I did. Should I contact my bank now? Or yeah, I get it all the time, and that's fine. It's part of being a geek. But you know, internally, if you do something, report it. You know, so patch, keep things updated, be smart, and know who to speak to if you think something goes wrong. No, we don't punish people for reporting stuff if they think they've done something. It's a weird thing. People think, I'm going to get in so much trouble because I clicked a link. No, you know, you're going to get in trouble if you clicked a link and then you try to cover up the fact that you clicked a link, because we will find out, because we're able to do forensics. You know, so it's about being smart. We celebrate the fact that people identify things. One thing the awareness, behaviors, and cultures team do is just that. They reward people for kind of going, this looks weird, this feels weird, there's something wrong with this. It's you know, it's that's the culture that we strive for
You never
in
know as well.
organizations.
If someone reports something, it could be the first time you've ever seen it, and it opens up your eyes to an area that is not actually as defended as you thought it was. So then you're actually helping your job and keeping you busy.
Absolutely, yeah. We've seen that. That I mean, we did. So we kind of muck in with the recovery and the what would you call it? Kind of like the incident management process or the incident response process. We muck in with that, not so much as we used to, but in the past, because I mean, essentially, we have whole departments that specialize in that, and that's their day to day. They, you know, they are, they will do it. And they'll do it right, and they'll do it well. Yeah, that's their whole kind of, it's their day to day. We kind of muck in when needed. We're here to help, kind of thing. And it's actually really useful because, as somebody that operates primarily as an attacker, to see how other people are attacking systems, it can be really, really eye-opening. The amount of times you look at something, you kind of, I can't help but be impressed sometimes with the way that people compromise stuff. Certainly when it comes to the human elements as well, because you always do that thing like, wait, they did what? How did they fall for that? That is what? They, you know, and it can be one of those, you know, wait, this feels like it's out of a film, but it's not out of a film because I'm currently in the office at 7 o'clock at night trying to deal with it. So what? You know, and it can be awe-inspiring to see how some people break stuff is, and it d definitely, definitely does help with for you know, it's helpful for us. If someone points at a thing and sees it before we do, that's brilliant because that's something we can learn from.
Well, Mike, I love your passion about this subject. I could talk to you for hours about this. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I think we're all feeling a little bit scared on edge, but also reassured that there are things there to help look after us as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mike.
No worries. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Mike Ancliffe from the MOD's Technical Assurance Team. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.